Well, good morning. How are you? Hey, so the Star Wars saga, with all its stories and episodes, it has been set a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And although it has kind of the feeling of being futuristic, it's a story that's actually set in the past. I can't help but sometimes wonder if that's why it works so well. If that's why we kind of received it all into complete mainstream culture, this kind of futuristic feeling sci-fi thing where other things kind of only make it to a certain level, but Star Wars just crushed those, because maybe it's because it's set in the past. And historically, and research shows that most people are more comfortable and really enjoy the idea of the past, even if they didn't enjoy it when it was their present. Oddly enough, isn't that kind of funny? The glorification of the past. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Like, people just, like, in the present moments, like, one day you will wax nostalgic about whatever it is you're stressing about right now. Is kind of how it goes in humanity. It's this glorification of the past because the past has familiarity. You know, as we live in the present, the past is at least familiar, whereas the future is uncertain. And wherever there's uncertainty, there's a close cousin of uncertainty called fear, right? And fear impacts the way we live presently. And so the past is more comfortable. And this is why studies show time and time again that humans often romanticize the past. We actually turn things that were struggles into good things, and we turn good things into great things, while forgetting the daily stresses. It's a strange but true phenomenon that is unique only to the human species. So that's what we're going to talk about today, the past, and how we tend to get stuck there sometimes. I mean, we have to live in the present, at least we're supposed to, but most of us sometimes feel like we're living in the past as if we're stuck there. And I want to talk about some things that might have us stuck there, because those things, whatever it is we're stuck to in the past, is definitely informing how we're living presently, and it will definitely impact our future together. Agreed? So it's Rogue One Sunday, and this Sunday, you should know, was designed by the teaching team to be a one-off message where the teacher at whatever assigned campus could just go rogue. Right? Could just tailor a message any way they saw fit for whatever campus that they were speaking at that week, and then our creative team found out Rogue One and just ran amok with the whole Star Wars thing, which I think is pretty great, actually. If you're dressed in Star Wars gear, give it up for all those who dress up. Someone said I shouldn't point them out, and I said back, well, if you dress in Star Wars gear, you don't mind standing out. It's not like you thought, I'll just blend into the background, right? You know what I'm saying? That's not how that works. All right, so today I choose to talk about our human tendency to get stuck living in certain moments in the past and how they affect our present and our future together. So right now I'm going to take a quick straw poll, okay? So I want you to raise your hands high if this matters to you at all. So I'm going to ask a question. You raise your hands really high if this pertains to you. How many of you in this room, how many of us have ever been a toddler? Go. Okay. I got to admit, I thought I'd see 100%. I'm not going to lie. I thought maybe I'm in the wrong place. I thought 100% of us would acknowledge that we've been a toddler. But it's interesting, apparently we only glorify the parts of the past we can remember, all right? So, because have you ever noticed we have a human tendency to talk about toddlers as if we were never one? Did you ever notice that? Like, we always say things like, oh, they're so cute at that age. They're so cute. Oh, man, they're a handful at that age. Woo. Oh, you know what they need at that age? I'll tell you what they need. I don't know why that guy's always from Jersey. Just accept it. It's true. But we've all been toddlers. And our desire, you know, to romanticize even what toddlers do and behave like, this is what we do. We always remember those first words, mama, dada, right? Because we coached that. You know, we were like, mommy, mom, come on, say mom, say daddy, baby. And we coach it. And sure enough, mama and dada, those sounds are some of the first sounds that we as humans ever make. But you should know this. Research shows that two of the first words we humans ever use with full cognitive awareness of what we're saying and with intent, the two words that come up time and time again as being right at the top are the words no and the word mine. Those are the words that we get to first with like verbal understanding. And it's funny how those two words often accompany a very physical, visceral reaction that normally looks something like this. No! Mine! You ever notice that? And I've talked about this very subject in a corporate setting and ministry settings, and I've had people challenge me, and I get it. They say, Rob, I actually know toddlers that are very generous and they give and they share. And I'll say, really? Really? Did someone teach them that? Or did that come naturally? Because I don't remember anyone ever teaching a toddler, hey, when Tommy takes your toy, do this. No! Mine! No one teaches that. It's just what we do. It's just what humans do. No, mine, right? And if we're fortunate, there's an adult human that comes along. Maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a grandparent, maybe it's a teacher, comes along and says, no, that's not the best way to live. That's not the best. Living like this is not the best way to live. You should share. You should share. You should be willing to open up and share. And so if we're fortunate, somebody comes along and teaches us that principle, and we learn the benefits of maybe reconnecting with how we were actually made to live, which is like this, not like this. But something in our brokenness, something in this human state that's broken in this world causes us just to reflex to, mine, no. And I want to really talk about that because that's the thing that can get us stuck somewhere in the past. I want to suggest to you that maybe there's a moment in your past that you just grabbed and said, nah, this one's mine, and I'm staying with it. And you'll get, if you're not careful, you'll get stuck living in and out of that moment for the rest of your life. And it doesn't take long in life for that reflex to come back. Even when people teach us, no, share, open, it's a reflex that happens. And sometimes it's a positive thing. I don't want to be completely negative. Sometimes it's something completely positive. Sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, freshman year. I didn't have a care in the world. The freshman 15 was totally worth it. It was awesome. You know what I mean? Oh, freshman year, I didn't have a care in the world. By the time I was a junior, senior, I was so worried about what happened after graduation. It was terrible. But freshman year, right? Maybe it's like, oh, when the kids were small, when they were still just small. Oh, time went so fast. The kids were just small. And when the kids were small, you were like, I can't wait till they grow up, right? But it's like when the kids were small. Or maybe it's like life before kids. Oh my gosh. Life before kids. Like it's something but we're grabbing. We're like, oh, that's the moment I want to treasure and cherish. And sometimes it's a very good thing. Sometimes it's just like tears streaming down our face as we wax nostalgic for something, some glory day lived beyond. You know, I remember I grew up in a home where my mom would always say, Rob, you don't get, oh, the 50s. Oh, the 50s, it was the golden age. It was the best decade to grow up ever, the 50s. And I got a little older, I was like, maybe not for everybody, Mom, right? She said, no, you weren't alive, you don't know. Well, I'm sorry, I'm trying to take a rational, cultural exegesis here of what's happening. It seems like a lot of women wouldn't agree with you. I mean, anybody who's not Caucasian, maybe? I don't know. I'm not trying to make it, I'm just saying, Maybe it's not the 50s, but I'm not blaming her because I get it, the attachment, because my kids grew up with me going, oh, the 80s. Oh, the 80s is the best thing. We still had rock and roll bands, man. We had hair bands and GNR and oh, yeah. And MTV still played music. And then some of you, it's like the 90s, man. We were grunge. We didn't need to be act disenfranchised or emo. We were emo, man. We were. We just lived it. And yo, MTV rapped in the 90s, right? And some of you are like, I wasn't even born when you're talking about what you're talking about. But you will. You'll get, young people, you'll get to know. Someone's going to call your music classic. I don't know when that happens formally. I just know it's a lot sooner than you think. That's what I know. It's going to happen. Sometimes it's a positive thing. Sometimes it's something that was just great and it's nostalgic and we just grabbed onto it and we've been living out of that space ever since. We haven't let it go. We haven't even moved in the future and it's informing our present right now. Sometimes it's a very good thing. I want you to know that the Bible actually really speaks a warning against this type of thinking. I don't know if you know this. Solomon, the wisest man regarded, wisest man ever lived, he wrote these words in the book of Ecclesiastes. He said, "Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions." And I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be hard on you Christians a little bit here. Sometimes we're the guiltiest of this of anyone. But the Bible actually discourages this type of thinking. Do not say the old days are better than these. It's not wise. Like, live in the present moment that God designed for you right now. Create a better future together. Like, don't get stuck holding on to some glory day. Sometimes it's a positive thing, it gets us stuck. Sometimes it's not. I remember when I was turning 8 years old, right before my 8th birthday, and I'd asked my parents for a BMX bike. Anybody know BMX? They were all the rage when I was a kid. These little off-road, like, bicycles, not vroom vroom bikes, but like bicycle. And I wanted one so bad, and I knew I wasn't going to get one. I wasn't delusional. I mean, my family didn't really have money. We kind of grew up American poor, and we didn't really have a lot. I didn't even have a bed till I was, like, in junior high. It's a true statement. I slept on the couch till I was in junior high. We didn't have a lot of cash. We were a cash-strapped family. But I wanted a BMX bike, and I just knew I wasn't going to get one. I mean, they were like $100. And some of you might say, well, $100 is not much for a bike. It was 1977. $100 in 1977 is actually equivalent to $414.83 today. That's very specific, by the way. I looked it up yesterday. So that was a lot of money for a cash-strapped family like ours. And I just knew I wasn't going to get one. But lo and behold, 40 years ago to the day, last Sunday, I woke up on my birthday, my 8th birthday, and I had a BMX bike. I couldn't believe it. My parents bought it for me. Somebody might ask, wait a minute, you didn't have a bed, but you got a BMX bike? I didn't say they were wise. I just said, Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. I was 8 years old and I had a BMX bike. That's all I'm saying. And so I got this bike and I rode it everywhere. Because back then, you know, in the good old days, right, you could ride your bike anywhere you wanted. You see what I just did there? Ha. Anyway, so you could ride your bike anywhere, and I remember riding over the local ditch where all the kids played. I told you we were poor, and we played in a ditch. And I was like, check out my BMX bike. I don't even think we did this back then, but that's what I felt. And I was just showing it off, and I was riding it everywhere, and then the street lights came on, and you know what that meant? It meant time to come in, and I was so bummed I had to come in. So I remember taking my bike, I locked it up in the shed, I ran into my house, I got on the couch where I slept, and I remember I couldn't sleep that night. I couldn't wait to get up the next morning and ride that bike again all day. It was summer. I had a summer birthday. It was great. I was going to ride my bike all day. I woke up the next morning after not sleeping hardly a wink, and I woke up and I ran out to the shed, and the shed doors were mysteriously open, and the lock was busted. And I walked in, and my BMX bike was gone. Stolen. One day, they say it's better to have love and loss. Bull crap, right? Like, one day, right? And I'll never forget, my mom called the police. I'll never forget the Norfolk PD, the officer. I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia. I'll never forget the Norfolk PD officer filling out a report and looking at me and saying, kid, you're never going to see your bike again. Oh. I don't know who taught you to work with kids, man, but they shouldn't train you to say that. I was devastated. I mean, honestly, and with fists clenched, raised in the air, like, this is not okay. Right? This is not right. Someone stole this from me. I can't imagine who would do such a thing to someone. It's not okay, right? And with raised fists in the air, if you have suffered any sort of injustice, if you had suffered at the hands of anyone, sometimes we can just clamp onto that moment, grab that moment, raise our fists in the air, and just start waving them in anger and defiance. No, it's not okay. And we are stuck right there if we're not careful. And we're just like, this is not all right. And with our waved fists, sometimes assaulting others metaphorically, sometimes quite literally, we just get stuck in a particular moment in the past. And today I want to say to you, maybe we're not stuck nearly as much as we're just holding on to something we were never intended to hold on to. Maybe there's no magic, you know, adhesive that's got us stuck to any particular moment in the past any more than our own metaphoric two hands that just clamped hold of something and said, I refuse to let this go. Is that possible? So I want to talk about a story in the scriptures where Jesus meets a man. And it's kind of a famous story. It's gotten some fame in its day. And sometimes familiarity breeds contempt. So be careful. Because this is a fascinating story where Jesus meets a man, and the man's immediate response to Jesus' invitation to change his life is an immediate one to do this, for to go from this to this. He just starts letting things go, like right away. It's an amazing story. I'm going to read it out of the Gospel of, on Star Wars Sunday, I'm going to read out the Gospel of Luke. Very good. Thank you. Only appropriate. Luke 19, it reads this way. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man there was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, a wee little man was he, apparently, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead, climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this and began to mutter. And when muttering happens, nothing good happens there, you should know. And this is what they mutter. He has gone to be the guest of a sinner? But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. And then Jesus gives his mission statement if you don't know what it is. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. It's incredible. Incredible passage. An incredible encounter with Jesus and a man. It's unbelievable, in fact. So let's just break it down real quick. It says that Zacchaeus was a short man, and I don't know if he was speaking, I don't know if he had Napoleon's complex. I'm pretty sure he didn't because Napoleon didn't come along yet. In Napoleon's day, maybe they called it Zacchaeus complex. I don't know. Where a short person has to live a big, you know, big existence to kind of prove something. I don't know. I don't know, but Zacchaeus is a short man. He's a chief tax collector. If you don't know what this means, basically, there were tax collectors who were Jewish who taxed the Jews on behalf of the Roman Empire. So they kind of went to bed with the empire, the evil empire. They were in cahoots with the evil empire. And in doing so, they were taxing not only the Jews at very high rates, their own people, according to the Roman tax, they would take money and they would charge even more and then skim that off the top for themselves. Now, Zacchaeus is a chief tax collector, meaning he has tax collectors under him, all of which are taking and charging more and skimming, and then he's charging and skimming from them. So he's very wealthy and he's very hated. Because Jews at this time, many Jews in this region of the world were taxed up to 90% of their earnings. I don't care what your political ideology is. No one wants to give up 90% of their hard-earned cash. You would hate the people doing that to you. You would hate, especially if you knew, my own people, the people that are supposed to be loyal to me are taking even more and taking it for themselves so that they can live the high life while I am stuck impoverished. So this is Zacchaeus' story, and he's very short, so he runs ahead. He's heard something about Jesus. I don't know what he's heard. I don't know why he lives this way. I don't know what made him choose to start going, mine, mine, I'll take it. I don't know what happened. I don't know if he got teased for being short when he was growing up. I don't know what happened, but something in his life caused him to just do this, to go to the human instinct to like, no, mine, no, mine. Something has him living this way. He's obviously heard something about Jesus. He's very curious. And in his zeal to understand who Jesus is, he runs ahead, climbs a tree in order to see him. Jesus reaches a spot, sees his zeal, and rewards it immediately. You should know that Jesus very much honors and rewards people who are earnestly wanting to be connected to him. People are like, I don't care if I even look foolish right now. Jesus is like, beautiful, that's beautiful, and you will have me. And it's a really cool moment. So he climbs this tree, and Jesus sees it and says, come down from there at once. I must stay at your house today. And this is fascinating because right away, the crowds, we hate him. He's going with a tax collector. Oh, this is not good. What is Jesus doing? And Jesus is just like zoned in, like, this is why I came, to seek and save the people that are just stuck in something, that are just lost and desperate, and they're stuck in something, and it's just got them behaving in ways that they were never created to behave, and they were meant to know God. And in knowing God, they would realize, oh my gosh, I don't have to be so stingy. I don't have to be so self-centered. I don't have to be, like, there's something greater than me. And Jesus has this encounter. He says, come down. I must stay at your house today. And I think for most of us, this is kind of bizarre, because most of us would be like, oh, you're coming to my house? Oh, well, I got to tidy a few things up. Okay? And, you know, Jesus, did anybody teach you manners? You don't really invite yourself over to someone's house. Like, Mary did a very poor job, apparently, right? But this is a different invitation altogether. Jesus is saying, no, you want healed? You want healed from all this that's ailing you? You want healed from this whatever this is that you do that just is corrupt and causes you to take advantage of people, causes you to steal from other people? You want freedom from that? I must come stay at your house. And Zacchaeus' response is fascinating, because he doesn't even hesitate. He doesn't say, oh, I got to tidy the place up. There's a few things I probably need to hide. Few things I need to get in order before, because that's a tendency. It's a human tendency. I've seen it here at Gateway countless times. There are people who know I need Jesus, I need God, and yet there's something in them that says, "But I just got to get a few things straight first." It just doesn't work like that. One, God sees all the mess anyway, and what He's saying is the invitation is, no, that's why I must come in. That's why I must come reside in this house. It's not getting cleaned up any other way. And it's fascinating, because Zacchaeus doesn't even flinch. He immediately says, he welcomed him gladly. He immediately had a moment with Jesus, and he was like, yes, come in. And the immediate response of Zacchaeus at this moment is fascinating. A man who, above all other people I've ever seen, maybe doing this, no, mine, stealing, taking from other people, no, mine, going with that human reflex. Suddenly, in a moment, when he meets Jesus, immediately, it's like this. All the junk he's been grabbing and holding to, he's just, It's fascinating. It says that he said, here and now, this is like unbelievable. I'll give half of everything I have to the poor. I have so much, I'll just give half away. And then he says, and if I've cheated anyone, I'll go through the records. If I've cheated anyone, I'll pay him back four times the amount, which is unbelievably magnanimous. You should realize that the Levitical law of the day that tied back to Moses, this sort of order of the day, the rule of the day would be that if you had cheated or stole anything from anyone, that you had to pay him back the exact amount you took from them, and then add around 20%, like a interest fee. And Zacchaeus says, 20%, no way, I'm given four times what I cheated. It's unbelievable. It's this to this. It's just Jesus saying, let me clean up the place for you. And he immediately releases things in Zacchaeus, immediately. And some of us have had that experience with Jesus where we realize, oh my gosh, I don't have to hold on to that burden anymore. I don't have to hold on to that thing that's corrupting my present and definitely killing my future. I can let that go. And for some of us, we come to Jesus and we're still in that journey. We're still in that process of letting it go. We're going through things like 12 steps. We're going through spiritual outcomes and life groups. We're doing things where we're realizing, oh my gosh, this is a continual process of just letting the things go. Because the truth is, in our past, we have things. We don't have a thing, we have things. And some of us are learning we can let it go. And we can learn to live with our hands open, instead of clinching for everything we have. And so to just drive this point home, I want to ask for a volunteer real quick. Can a volunteer, anybody want a volunteer to come up real quick? Anybody? Don't everybody volunteer at once, seriously. Anybody right over here? Right here. Come on up. Come on up. So I just want to drive this point home. I've chosen to use a bottle of coins. It has nothing to do with money. It could be money, But it could be something much more. It could be anything. So here's what I want you to do. What's your name?
Trisha.
Trisha, give it up for Trisha. So we're gonna have you sing, Trish. I'm just kidding. Okay. We're not gonna do that to you. Just kidding. So here's what I want you to do. I just want you to stand like this with your hands cupped open, just like that. And I'm gonna pour as much as I can into your hands with them open, okay? Let's see how much.
They're probably dirty, huh?
Yeah, these coins. Yeah, you're gonna need some kind of. Let's see how many coins two open hands can handle. Okay, that's quite a bit of coins that you can handle. Okay, so here's all I want you to do. I just want you to clench your fists as tight as you can. Clench them. There you go.
Sorry about the mess.
You can drop them down. That's great. Thank you. Can you give it up for Trisha? I just want you to see it. I hope it's very obvious to you what your capacity is when you live your life with open hands. What becomes possible when you just live your life like this? Not clinging to any corrupt thing. Not stuck in any one moment or several moments from the past. Not grabbing hold. Not trying to mine. Not doing that, because when you live your life with open hands, I promise you this: your capacity to be trusted and to handle so much more is infinitely more possible. The moment you start reflexing back to, mine, everything you can hold just starts slipping away. Everything. Princess Leia actually said it well when she said, "The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, to the evil general, the more star systems will slip through your fingers." The more you tighten, the more you grab hold, the more will slip away from you, destroying your present living and anything that you can do, anything that we can do together in the future. And so this morning I want to ask, which is it going to be? What's your future and our future going to look like together? What's it going to be, Gateway? Is it going to be the clenched fist of bitterness, scars, sometimes even rage? Is it going to be nostalgia for the good old days? Oh, when it was so much simpler, whatever, you know, and all that thinking that the Bible warns us about? Or is it going to be the open hands of wonder and joy and even praise? Could it be the open hands of praise? Let me pray for us. And God, I want to pray in this moment that anything at all that we cling to that is not of you, that we would let it go right now. That we would simply open our hands to everything that is possible with you. And God, if there's someone here today and they've never had Zacchaeus' moment with Jesus, I pray right now they would have that moment, that they would say, "Yes, Jesus, I invite you in. You come in, clean the house. Open my hands, Jesus. I've been holding on to all kinds of things that aren't good and aren't good for me and aren't good for others." God, for every person in this room, every person with an earshot of my voice, every person watching on internet, Branson, everywhere at all, I pray right now that they would open their hands to everything you have and want them to hold. And right now, I just pray that we just enter a moment of praise with open hands as we begin to dream about what's possible in the name of Jesus.